I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. In 2014, an estimated 1.4 million U.S. children had a parent in jail or in prison. This is according to the National Resource Center on Children and Families of the Incarcerated. Today, we discuss the developmental and social impacts of having an incarcerated parent on children. In a few minutes, we're joined by an adult who experienced parental incarceration as a child, and we'll hear about a residential camp for children with incarcerated parents. But first, the dramatic rise in the U.S. prison population over the last quarter century has come with an equally steep growth in the number of kids with incarcerated parents. A recent study shows that among African-American children born in 1990, more than one quarter have had a parent go to jail or prison by the time they became teenagers. 15-year-old radio rookie Keith Tingman knows just how difficult it is for kids when their parents are arrested.
My mom is short and pretty. She's a respectful person, not the type to hurt somebody's feelings or do something bad. Mom, what you making?
I just took some steak out the oven.
She cooks dinner for us every night.
And some rice and peas, I'll make that later.
When I'm in a funny mood, I fake punch her on her side, and she does it back. Or sometimes my mom and her best friend bothered me.
I didn't even make a muscle yet.
Like asking me to make a muscle.
Wow.
My dad is a DJ. He could be in the living room throwing and scratching songs. Or he could be watching my little brother. He's autistic. But 5 years ago, something bad happened, and I was separated from my dad and my mom.
Okay, I'm Keith. I'm a radio rookie reporter. I'm interviewing my mom. So today, I want to ask you about the incident that what happened on my birthday, April 25th, 2004. Like, how did you feel that day?
Oh, wow. Sad, hurt, scared. Nervous.
On my 10th birthday, we were walking up a hill from the supermarket near our house, and two guys stopped and asked us questions about a lost wallet. We told them we didn't know where it was, and they started accusing us anyway. Two policemen came out of their car and asked my mom questions.
The cop goes, wait a minute, you robbed somebody. I'm like, what?
Then they just put the cuffs on her.
And I seen all of the anger in your face, and that's what, like, right now, it's getting a little emotional for me right now because, like, I remember that day clearly. Like, for a person who never did nothing, never committed any crime or anything like that, to be charged with something like that.
I get frustrated seeing my mom cry and thinking of her sadness about what happened. My mom only cries once in a blue.
I want to work. I don't have a job. People tend to look at your record. All the reference I have, they don't look at that. They look at possession of stolen property.
What about you? That day, like, how did you feel?
I felt mad. I was angry.
Why was you angry?
I didn't want to see you get taken to jail.
I never talked to anyone outside of my family about it until this year.
I started going to the Next Generation Center, a friendly place for teenagers. They have programs like drumming, arts, and cooking. Kids also hang out and play cards like Uno. In the center, I had a feeling other kids had parents who were incarcerated, so I went and asked them.
Do you know, like, any a part of your family who been incarcerated?
I felt nervous because I'm not used to going up to people and asking them questions.
I could say more than half my family have been incarcerated, including my pops, but he was gone for a while. When he came out, you know, he missed out on a lot, so he felt he had to catch up on that, so he wound up leaving the house.
I'm always used to have my father around. Like, I always call him up, Daddy, come get me. I want to go shopping. Let's go to arcade. Can't do that because my father's in jail, so I feel sad about it.
Unique.
I ain't get an ID. I'm not SYP.
I noticed one kid from summer school. We sat at the same table.
An ID from here?
But back then, we didn't know much about each other.
I had a story my family was taken away from me because they was arrested, and I want to know, do you ever have an experience of that?
Yes, my father and my mother had a fight, and I sit there and watch them. And as the cops came, I was sitting in the house by myself, no parents, until they came back.
How did that affect you?
It affected me bad because I had to sit there with me and my sisters crying, and we didn't have nobody watching us but our brother, which had to go to work every day.
Every day for 10 months, I couldn't see my dad. And I was really missing him. My mom only stayed in jail for a day. My father missed everything when I started school, Christmas, my mom's birthday. But I didn't tell anyone at school because I was embarrassed. Kids might have teased me or something. Ooh, your dad's in jail. I wanted to keep it to myself, and so did my friend from summer school.
I guess it was something inside for me and the family to do, not everybody else to know, so.
Did you go and see him?
No, I never went to go see my father, because I was afraid.
I remember I was nervous the first time I visited my dad. We took a long bus ride to Rikers Island. There were so many gates for the guards to open. The guards walked us to him. My dad wore a gray uniform. When we said goodbye, he hugged and kissed me.
Well, let me ask you a tough question. Are you scared your mom and dad are going to get away again?
Yes, I will be scared. Sophia Scrum works at the Fortune Society. She helps families when parents are incarcerated.
But they're not in the tank.
She has a fish tank in her office.
I got two missing fish, the bigger one too.
But she couldn't find some of her fish.
Do you think somebody came in and grabbed them?
Anyway, she told me about a guy whose 4-year-old daughter was searched when she came to visit him in jail.
This is not a good world for kids. It's depressing. It's institutionalized. It's formalized. It's not a kid's world, period. It is a form of trauma to be separated from a parent. This is the kind of stuff that doesn't really leave you.
I asked my sister, Kiara, if she thought what happened on my birthday changed me.
You kind of changed a little. I think it was because you thought it was your fault. You felt guilt.
I do feel guilty about what happened. We wouldn't have been out that day if it wasn't my birthday.
Maybe it made you think different of your father.
Why do you say that?
Because he was the cause?
I was shocked. Because she never mentioned she thought he picked up the wallet.
Wait, why did you say he was the cause?
She blinked out for a little bit. I don't think she wanted to go into more details.
Let me skip that question.
Yeah.
It's kind of awkward to me also, because I believe he's innocent.
That's one of the baddest days that happened to me in my life. If I could rewind that day and fix that day, it would be way much better. Cause that was also your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Turned to a horrible day, one of the horriblest days in my life.
How did you feel in jail?
Oh man, I felt depressed. We'll phone y'all every night. Sometimes a lot of the nights y'all got a lot of frustration out of me.
My mother told me, don't think of it as going to jail. Think about it like he's on a vacation. I tried to believe it. Then one day in fifth grade, I came home and my mom called me and asked me for something. And I didn't go to her. I was about to ask her, what do you want from me? Then I tilted my head to the side because I saw someone standing next to her. And it was my father. I ran to him and gave him a big hug. For WNYC, I'm rookie reporter Keith Tingman.
And joining us now is Megan Sullivan. She's the Associate Dean for Faculty Research and Development and Associate Professor of Rhetoric at Boston University. She's also the co-editor of Parental Incarceration, Personal Accounts, and Development Impact. And she's the daughter of an incarcerated parent. Welcome, Megan. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Julia Lytle. She's a program manager of Amazing Grace of Cape Cod, a week-long residential camp program for children whose parent is or has been incarcerated. Welcome to you, Julie.
Thank you, Mindy.
So hearing directly from children of incarcerated parents is powerful. These kids are carrying a tremendous burden. Research tells us that it's a burden that stays with them for their entire lives, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But first, Megan, we have a statistic from 2014 that 1.4 million U.S. children have a parent behind bars. Has that number changed significantly over the past decade?
The most recent number we have is 2.7 million.
Wow.
So 2.7 million children currently have a parent in jail or prison in the United States, and the vast majority of them are under 10 years old.
There are a number of different emotions that children have when a parent is arrested and imprisoned. For those who have a strong bond with the parent, it's traumatic to be separated. So what are the different kinds of trauma that can impact a child?
Research now calls parental incarceration an experience that can stay with children throughout their lives. It's an experience that can happen at any time, but stay with children throughout their lives. And the reality is that how children feel differs depending what their circumstances are. Obviously, the people who have a custodial parent, a parent who lived with them and who go to prison or jail, they have sometimes the most difficult time. But really, anybody who has a relationship with their parent, if it's a good relationship, it's usually extremely traumatic for them. Hmm.
In that piece that we just heard, one boy talks about how scary it was when the police came into his home and removed his mother, and he describes how he and his sisters were crying. Depending on the circumstances, there can be a lot of fear when a parent is taken away, fear of the police, fear of another parent being taken. I would imagine this is a common emotion, right? Go ahead, Julia.
We had a young child at camp a couple summers ago who, during the middle of the night, his father was incarcerated. The police came, they knocked on the doors, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And the impact was even greater because he was planning the next morning on going fishing with his dad. And so when he was at camp, he was constantly afraid that his mom was going to disappear while he was at camp, that he wouldn't be there to protect her and to support her. That kind of experience of having these men, women in their uniforms, with their batons, with their guns, he just described how terrifying it was. Mm-hmm. And we tried to help him to calm those fears, but it's an overwhelming experience.
Yeah. Also in that piece, a boy talks about being left home alone with his sisters after the police took his mother. And then he mentions that his older brother was home to look after them, but he had to work without an adult. Children can feel pretty vulnerable and alone at home alone, right? I mean, this is what you probably see, Julie, with the kids that come to your camp.
We have a wide range of kids. They're with all sorts of different caregivers. Some are foster parents, some are parents, some are grandparents. And the hope is that they have some stability, especially when they've been put into the care of somebody else's hands. That's part of what we're trying to offer, is a chance for some adults to be regularly with them, both during the week of camp as well as with some of the year-round activities, so that they can have some stability beyond their family, beyond the person that's incarcerated, to be able to have a place to be able to trust.
Mm-hmm. But you're correct, excuse me, that Mindy, that the book you mentioned, Parental Incarceration, we have an essay from one young woman. We asked adults from across the country to reflect on what they thought their parent incarceration meant to them. And this is the first time anybody's ever asked adults to reflect on it and write about it. And we had a young woman from California write about how the day her mother went to prison, she came home from school and she saw the remnants of what had obviously been police in the house and taken her mother away. And she says in the essay, she said, "I knew I'd have to leave sooner or later, so I cleaned up the house, I cleaned up the apartment, and I left that day." And then she talks about how the first night she slept on a park bench near school because she didn't want to be late for class. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the statistically, people with incarcerated parents are at a greater risk of housing and food insecurity. So,
What are your thoughts about if you have a parent or jail in prison? We heard in that there was one boy who didn't visit his dad and another boy who did. Is there a benefit to the child to visit their parent in jail?
Statistically, the research is actually still out on this. Statistically, the research says there's a definite benefit to the parent and there's, quote, most likely a benefit to the child. That's what the statistics say. What I believe and what I tell teachers when I work with them and parents is that as long as the parent is safe and there's a good relationship, or there's a relationship where caregivers feel comfortable bringing the child to prison or jail and the child wants to go, then I think it's perfectly acceptable and even good. I think that sometimes what happens is children aren't brought to prison, and then the vast majority of prisoners will come home someday or will come back to their communities. And if a child hasn't visited a parent in prison or jail, he or she might have a difficult time communicating with that parent. Mm-hmm. But I always say it has to be specific to the family situation. Right. There are some prisons that are looking at email communication, electronic communication, although most prisoners don't have email. There are places that help people write to their parents in prison or jail. So there are various ways to maintain contact as well.
I was just hearing in a piece about the four-year-old girl searched. I'm just thinking it's traumatic enough to visit a prison that you're having to go through a search as well.
It is.
And before we went on the air, Julie, you were saying a lot of parents, they don't tell their child that their other parent is in jail. It's they're working out of state or they're away or whatever, because they don't want that child to suffer stigma.
Right. There are a lot of stigmas. And unfortunately, kids, especially at young ages, pick on each other when they find something that's different. Mm-hmm. And that fear of being found out, of having somebody start talking about my parent, my mom, or my dad being a jailbird and other things, some parents just choose to protect their kids. Some guardians are trying to keep them from being hurt more.
Yeah. And that it's so great that you bring up that experience that they said the four-year-old was hurt, and that's absolutely true. But again, in the reflections I get from adults, one adult in one state in the U.S. reflected on how she couldn't stand even looking at the guards when she went to visit her father in prison. Another young woman writes from another state about how nice the guards were to her. Mm-hmm. So I try not to sort of vilify anybody.
Well, the guards are doing their job.
They're doing their jobs, and some prisons have better child care facilities than others. Some prisons think about it ahead of time and have really good child care facilities. Others have nothing.
Statistically looking at that, would you say that the prisons that hold women are better at dealing with children visiting than the prisons with men, or is it really not?
I don't know the statistics for that. I think that there are the prisons where there are women tend to have better programs from what I've seen, but I don't know the statistics on it.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing the developmental and social impacts on children with an incarcerated parent. With us this morning is Megan Sullivan, Associate Dean for Faculty Research and Development and Associate Professor of Rhetoric at Boston University. She's also the co-editor of Parental Incarceration, Personal Accounts and Development Impact, and the daughter of an incarcerated parent. Also, Julie Lytle, who is the program manager of Amazing Grace of Cape Cod, a week-long residential camp program for children whose parent is or has been incarcerated. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Megan, your father was incarcerated when you were a child. Tell us the circumstances surrounding his imprisonment.
Yes, that it was interesting. So I was 10 years old. My father was a lawyer, so he was arrested for embezzling money, and he received a 2 to 5 year sentence in what was then Connecticut's maximum security. So he was also disbarred, which meant that when he came out of prison, he would never be able to work as a lawyer again. So I was one of six, and we were between the ages of 3 and 13. So I always tell people, when people ask me about that, I always say that the reality is that I had a lot of privileges that a lot of people don't. I'm white in a country where that helps. Even though my family had no money, because my father had taken all our money, even though we had no money after my father was arrested and he was the breadwinner, we still were able to remain in a middle-class community. So I had access to good schools and a safe community. Nevertheless, there are things that affect you. I mean, I said that, you know, there is something traumatic about kissing your father goodbye in the morning and then coming home from school and not having him there, you know, because we had no idea it was happening. And we never went to visit my father. My parents made that decision. My father didn't want us to see him in prison. And at the time, which is still the case, phone calls from prison were very expensive, so we also never spoke to him in those 2 years. But we did write letters back and forth.
As you mentioned, you were from a solidly middle-class family, struggling financially after your father was incarcerated. Did you have anger or resentment toward your father for causing your mother such financial stress?
Yeah, definitely. I think I had both anger and resentment. I'm not sure if I had that at 10 years old. I was probably a little too young for that. But later, when it became clear that the financial repercussions would take literally years to climb out of, that was problematic for me. It was also, I think I was also angry at the fact that I came from a community where, because my father was a pretty established lawyer, it was in, you know, his arrest and incarceration were in the front page of the newspaper and on television. I remember afterwards my mother stopped getting the newspaper for a while. She didn't want us to read any of it. So that was a little bit difficult.
Yeah. Did your father come home?
My father came home, and it's a pretty typical story. My father came home for about a year. Things were not going very well. He was unemployed. So my mother asked him if he couldn't sort of change his behavior, that he would have to leave. And I give her a lot of credit for that. She raised six children on her own and did an amazing job. But he left, and no, I don't think he ever really got it together.
Yeah. Let's talk to Bill, who's giving us a call from Hyannis. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Bill.
Morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a long story, but I'm going to try to make a brief point. I just like to say that families are affected even if the parent does not go to prison. My story, but very briefly, is that I was falsely arrested and maliciously prosecuted in another jurisdiction. I had a two-week jury trial. I was facing 13 criminal charges and 69 years prison. I beat all the serious charges, and I walked out with two misdemeanor convictions. I never went to prison. At the time, I was divorced and living with a young lady with whom I had a son. When I was arrested, I was put in jail under $10,000 bail. My brother had to come down and bail me out. When I got out of jail, my girlfriend and my son were gone. Mm. He was 6 years old at the time. I was supporting her and the son. I had two grown children previously whom I supported and was a good father to. My son was gone. I have not seen him. He will be 19 years old in a couple of days. I cannot find him.
Oh, Bill, I'm sorry
this
about that.
Very, very painful. Yeah. I can't tell you how painful this is.
Yeah. No, Bill, I'm sorry to hear that, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for calling. This, again, it goes to show what that separation from families. And I would imagine Bill's story is not that unusual, that, you know, something happens and, you know, the wife takes the children and leaves.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times that does happen. A lot of times the wife stays behind, but a lot of times that does happen. Also, Bill's story reminds me that we have 70 million people in the United States who are under some form of criminal justice supervision, whether parole, pre-parole, post-parole. So somehow they're connected with the criminal justice system, and that we have no account of their families. Mm-hmm. And if Bill's story indicates that families are affected by that as well.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. Bill, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. The other emotion you hear children describe is shame, and this isn't something they want their peers or even adults to know about. So emotions are often kept inside. Megan, was that your experience?
That was a huge experience. My siblings and I hardly ever talked about it amongst ourselves. I also tell people, partly I think because I'm from an Irish Catholic background, there are certain things we don't talk about in general. And that combined with the fact that we weren't the kind of family that would reach out. There wasn't a lot of help for us in the 1970s anyway. There's more now, thank God, like the Amazing Grace camp. If I had had that, I would have loved that. Mm-hmm. So thank God there's more there now today. But no, we didn't have any of that. And that combined with the kind of community response, I think there was a lot of shame. But as you get older, you realize that it's nothing you've done.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah, so but as a kid, it's hard.
It's very hard for a kid to.
And do you think that's changed somewhat now? And either one of you answered. Do you feel like kids are still feeling that shame, or are they more apt to talk about it?
I think it depends a lot on the kid and the way that their families have treated it. Mm-hmm. I do know the impact that it can have. When we've watched some of our campers come, you can tell the insecurities that they have. There was one young woman who pretty much had long hair that she kind of hid behind. Mm-hmm. You couldn't ever get her to look you in the eye. The first summer that we opened camp, she was a part of it, and she was pretty withdrawn. She wasn't as engaged with the other kids. She was much more introverted. What was a blessing for us that was working with the camp was that we realized when she came back the second year that something seemed different. And the good example that I share is that we have a climbing wall that the kids are able to try, and they can do as much or as little with harnesses on as they feel comfortable doing. The first year, she barely got a couple of feet off of the ground, and that was enough for her. The second year, she came with a determination. And not only did she get up a couple of feet, but she made it the whole way to the top and looked down beaming from behind the hair at the rest of us. And there was a way in which she walked that seemed a little more proud. And it seemed like it was one of those first major experiences where she was able to overcome that insecurity and the shame that she had been carrying for so long.
Mm. That's interesting. As mentioned, Amazing Grace is a week-long, all-expense-paid residential camp for children who've had or have an incarcerated parent. So what are the goals of the camp, Julie?
Our primary goal is to give the kids a chance to just be kids, to have fun, to experience an opportunity where they're unburdened. A lot of the families don't have the financial resources to be able to send their kids to camp, and so we provide this as a way for them to come without need for anything. We'll provide sleeping bags, backpacks, we give them school supplies, beach towels, everything that they need to be able to participate, all through the generosity of donors across the Cape.
I was going to say that it's funded just by donation, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we've had good opportunities with a couple of grants and with some support from churches and the governing bodies of different denominations, but it's all through donations.
And so what are the ages that you serve and activities?
We have 7 to 11-year-olds that come, and we are able to give them – we partner with the South Shore YMCA, Camp Burgess, and we're able to provide with their staff and our mentors the opportunity to swim, to meet horses and groom them, to do the climbing wall. There's low ropes and high ropes, kayaking, as well as games and adventures. Each night we try to do a campfire, and oftentimes their favorite thing is to sing songs and roast s'mores.
Yeah. Just like every now, do these kids realize that they're all, they all have a parent or have had a parent that's been jailed?
Our hope is that the parents have told them, the guardians have told them. Most of the time, I think that's true. What's nice is to be able to see the kids. We don't bring it up as a topic for them. It's not a therapeutic camp, but they have opportunities to commiserate when they're walking to the pond, when they're in their bunks at night talking to each other as the sun's going down and trying to capture the day. It's clear that they're finding support from each other.
And you mentioned that you're targeting 7 to 11 as the age group. Are there resources for older children available?
There are. This is where we've been fortunate to extend our relationship with the Y. As our kids age out, they have to be a part of our program between the 7 and 11-year-old age. But we are able to support them to go to a co-ed camp experience across the pond at Camp Hayward the same week as Camp Amazing Grace is offered. And if they are able, we would hope for them to stay long enough to go through the counseling training program and come back and be counselors with our program.
I would think that would be really important for the counselors to have had the same experience as the kids.
We have one young woman who that's her goal, and it's been great to be able to see her with that energy to come back and share her experience with the other kids.
Yeah. Now, it's also contingent, the number of kids you take is contingent on the number of volunteers you have.
Correct.
Is that tough for you to get enough volunteers to do this?
It really is. It's a proportional problem. We want to have two adults in each. We sleep in tents on platforms at the base camp at the Camp Burgess, and we need two adults for each tent. So we can't have more kids than we have adults for the overnights. And then during the daytime, we have two shifts, a morning shift and an afternoon shift. And because most of the young adults have left for college and other activities, we're left with a lot of moms and grandmom ages. So it's hard to find enough folks to be able to help us to fill all the shifts. Ideally, we had the first year a lot of generous people who could give us a couple of hours, but we found that it was too disruptive to have changes every time, every day. So we were trying to find folks that can volunteer for a shift for multiple days, ideally for the whole week.
So like if somebody could do an afternoon shift, let me say this is August 20th through the 25th, so somebody could maybe come in every afternoon from 1 to whatever, or
exactly.
The morning, so it's consistent, they don't have to spend the night.
We have a shift for overnight as well as a morning shift and an afternoon shift. We give them an opportunity to share a meal with the kids so that they have family-style meals and are able to stay together. And we try to pair mentors so that the same mentors with the same kids every morning, they trade off with the same group of mentors to come in the afternoon and then with the same group of mentors in the evening so that they always have the same group and they can tell each other stories about how the day went.
Mm-hmm. And where are you at now? How many volunteers? You obviously need some. I know, put my plug over
for you. We could still use some help, especially in the afternoons. And right now we're really looking for a camp nurse or a group of folks that are willing to be nurses in shifts. Mm-hmm. So that we can deal with some of the med situations that the kids bring.
Yeah. What do the volunteers tell you after that experience? This is going year four, right?
This is going to be our fourth summer. Yeah. It's heartwarming. I mean, so often we feel like we get more than what we offer. And that certainly was a surprise for some of the volunteers when they were first with us. but to hear the stories, to see the transformations, to have the opportunity now. We've had some kids that have come back every year for 4 years, and to be able to watch their growth and maturity and to share with them what this experience means. We've also been able to expand into some year-round programming because of a grant. And so some of those same mentors are now able to hear about the stories of what's going on in school and the progress that they're making and the challenges that they're facing and their successes with athletics and other things. So,
and these are kids from what, probably the southeast corner of the state here. Is that the range, the area that you cover?
Correct. We started just on the Cape, and we realized pretty quickly on that incarceration impacts in very many ways. And some of our incarcerated parents are actually in places off Cape. And so as the word got out, we've spread to include all of the South Shore.
Yeah. Are there other camps that you know of, Megan, like this around the
state? I don't know of any. Yeah. I don't know of any. This is the only camp I know of.
When I first heard of it, I was like, wow.
How great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This is actually a program that started as a result of Jackie Means. She's one of the first regularly ordained women in the Episcopal Church. She started a prison ministry for the Episcopal Church, and now there's at least 29 that I know of, camps that are modeled. We all started with the similar goals, but they've each developed in their own contexts.
Right. That's wonderful. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are discussing the development and social impacts on children with an incarcerated parent. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us this morning is Megan Sullivan, Associate Dean for Faculty Research and Development and Associate Professor of Rhetoric at Boston University. She's also the co-editor of Parental Incarceration, Personal Accounts and Development Impact, and the daughter of an incarcerated parent. And Julie Lytle, who's program manager of Amazing Grace of Cape Cod, a week-long residential camp program for children whose parents is or has been incarcerated. Megan, do you think it's important for kids to talk with peers about their experience and not just counselors or adults?
I do. I think it's important, and I always tell teachers and parents and families and counselors to take their cue from the child. Some children will want to talk about it more than others will. But I think it's really important. I think they get a lot out of talking to their peers. I mentioned to you before we started that I wrote a children's book that I wished I had, and in it, it's called Clarissa's Disappointment, and in it, Clarissa, a young girl who's just experienced her father's just, they're going into what we call the reentry period. The father just left prison after 5 years and coming home, and a lot of children experience a lot of stress and trauma around the homecoming as well as during the incarceration, and in the book, it's a teacher and a community poet who helped her, who helped Clarissa become a writer, but it's also her friends, and she doesn't talk to them so much about incarceration, but her friends back her up when she's bullied by someone in her class who does call her father a jailbird. Mm. So it's really nice to have friends and adults.
Well, I think it's true, like we were talking before we went there about the book, the anticipation is often a little more exciting than the reality, right. And to deal with that transition, and a transition is tough, especially on kids who, you know, aren't sure what to expect, and if they haven't seen their parent who's been in jail for mm-hmm. a while or had little contact, it's awkward, I would think, to say the least, right?
It's really awkward. I mean, the research tells us that that's an incredibly stressful period for families. And again, not all families are the same. Some people don't go home to their children when they come out of prison or jail. But for those who do, or for those who have contact with their family, often family structures and family dynamics have changed while the person's incarcerated. Often there are financial problems, and then the person who's incarcerated, as in the story that you mentioned at the top of the hour, or the young man gave his family story, people are unable to find employment. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they've lost their housing. Lots of things have happened. So there's a lot of pressure on people when parents come out of prison as well.
Also in the story we heard Keith talk about he felt guilt. He did nothing wrong, right. But he felt guilt. And I'm sure a lot of kids are like, he said, if it wasn't my birthday, we wouldn't have been out and that wouldn't have happened. But from a kid's perspective, you can understand that. So Julie, when you have the kids, I know you don't specifically talk about the kids, but when they talk to each other, do you find that those are common themes that they talk about?
there's a whole wide range. Certainly there's the sense of what could I have done to have prevented this, or what can I do to help my mom? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of protection, especially when it's the dad that's been incarcerated, that I've noticed, trying to figure out how do you get around those situations? There's emotions all over the place.
Right. Yeah. And as you were just mentioning, Megan, the getting the job and the piece we heard the mom saying, they're not looking at all my references. They're looking at my, you know, possession charge. And that's a difficult thing, getting the job after. And I'm sure the kids are feeling that frustration as well.
Oh, of course. I mean, I think in Massachusetts, we have the ban the box policy, you know, so that people aren't always asked about their incarceration, or they don't have to state it in employment records. But a lot of states don't have that. And even in Massachusetts, I mean, it's so difficult. And of course, if a parent can't get a job, that affects everything about the child. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of the ripple effect.
Well, some of the challenges, what is the reason for having been incarcerated? And we're seeing a growing population that's incarcerated because of addictions, mm-hmm, and abuses, right, around opioids. Unfortunately, when the parent comes out of jail, that transition is a difficult one, and they sometimes go back to using what had caused them to be incarcerated in the first place. And we've really struggled with a couple of kids. One who came, she's been living with her grandparents. She went to visit her father when he was home, and she found him passed out because of an overdose. Mm. And she was the one that had to call for the ambulance to be able to try to save him. Mm-hmm. And so those kinds of transitions, you can't anticipate what it's going to be, especially when the causes are things that are beyond your control.
Yeah. We've been talking a lot about dads who are incarcerated, but we certainly have a number, especially with the opioid problem, of moms, mm-hmm, that are now being incarcerated. Mm-hmm. Is that a little bit different? I mean, I think we were talking, like, if dads are incarcerated, mom is usually around. Right. Sometimes a kid will have both parents who are incarcerated, and sometimes a grandparent, or we've mentioned foster care. So there's a lot of different situations that these kids could find themselves in.
There are. I mean, we've had, if you look at a graph of the U.S. prison population from about 1921 to 1980, you have a relatively solid straight line graph. And then in 1980, it shoots up. And that's really the reason for that is the so-called war on drugs, three strikes policy, mm-hmm, and the amount of women who largely were incarcerated for not necessarily their own drug use, but being an accomplice to, mm-hmm, a partner's drug use. That's not always the case, but it's often the case. So we had a huge increase. We had something like an 800% increase of parents in prison. I always tell people now, most people in prison are parents.
Wow.
Over three quarters.
And this is where the children are the innocent victims. Mm-hmm. We have one family where drug addiction has led to both parents being incarcerated. There are four children in the family. They're each with a different caregiver. And so they don't get to see each other. They don't have a family sense until they have opportunities to join us for some of our year-round activities. Mm-hmm. And the grandmother who's raising one of the children is so grateful that they have the opportunity to come together because of events like what we offer, because they otherwise wouldn't be together with their siblings.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org.
Mindy, could I just mention
absolutely
one thing on that? No, I always tell people, and mainly I work with teachers, but teachers and families and counselors, and I always say, just because a parent's in prison doesn't mean he or she is a bad parent.
Of course.
Mm. And I think it's hard for the general public to remember that. I can hear somebody thinking as they're listening to this, well, the parent shouldn't have done something wrong to go to prison in the first place. Well, first of all, not everybody who's in prison has actually committed a crime. Some are awaiting trial, especially if they're in jail. They're definitely awaiting trial. And even for those who have, oftentimes there are various circumstances. I'm not justifying anything. I'm just saying that really the children have nothing to do with, mm-hmm, that.
They're innocent.
They're not part of that, and their parent's still their parent.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think that's a really important thing, and I think that's something that the camp is doing, and trying to say to children, you know what, I think the best thing we can do for children is to treat them as children. And that's what the camp is doing, saying, you know, you are children. You're, you know,
Have Have a good time.
Have a good time. Flash around in the summer. Do what you need to do. I say the same thing to parents. I mean, teachers, I say. The main thing I say to teachers is, first of all, recognize that there very well might be consequences of parental incarceration. And that if, and statistics vary between 1 in 14 and 1 in 24 children have an incarcerated parent in the United States, guaranteed there will be someone in your class who has had a parent incarcerated. So there may very well be things that you have to look out for, but also their children. Just give them the best education and just give them the best experience they can have in children.
Yeah. Julie, you mentioned that your camp is not a therapeutic camp. So what kind of training does your staff get?
Well, the good news is that a lot of the volunteers that are able to be mentors with us are coming with backgrounds as counselors, as school teachers, as people who have been prepared by their profession to be able to support kids in this way. And one of the things we do for training is to really help them to get to know each other so that regardless of what background we bring when we come, we're able to know who are the specialists that have some of that extra training that can help us out if we get into a situation where we need more guidance. Mm-hmm. The training that we're offering tonight is a talk that Megan is going to be offering for our volunteers. It's also open to the public, where she'll be talking more about the developmental impact. Mm-hmm. That's a part of it. The day before camp opens on August 19th, we do training to get through different ways of addressing the behavioral situation so that we can do it in a loving, positive way, hopefully giving them a chance to be heard so that we can really understand what is going on that's causing some of the conflict right. that is experienced, and helping them to think about other alternatives rather than some of the more sometimes aggressive ways in mm-hmm. which they can respond without being aware of how that's just adding to the conflict rather than helping to de-escalate it.
Right, and you're a young kid and you've got a lot of anger, and you can see where there might be some behavioral issues, and not everybody is going to be a good fit for this camp, and I know you've had that experience, and that's got to be really heart-wrenching when you have to tell somebody they have to go home. And it's not because you don't want them there, but you have to think about the safety of the other kids.
We keep trying to work at finding ways to help each child to be able to express their best self. And it's not always possible, but we have had great success with most of our kids. Unfortunately, we've had one child that needed to go home.
Only one, though, out of...
But yeah, only one only out one. Of over 54 kids in the past mm-hmm. four summers.
Yeah. How do you find the campers for the program?
Word's put out everywhere. We are working with the school counselors. We're working with different counseling agencies that support the kids. We go into the prisons to talk to the parents and people that are in prison about their children and grandchildren. We work with the police and the different criminal justice systems. We put news out in the radio and newspaper. We're grateful for your help in helping to get the word out.
Yeah. Megan, some interpretations of data about children of incarcerated parents postulated that they are more likely to become incarcerated in their lifetime than those whose parents have never been incarcerated. So what do we know?
Yeah, what we know is, and this is the newest research, for a long time we thought that there were more children who sort of followed their parents' footsteps. But the latest research, and the research that's been the most fully vetted, is that about 30% of children who have incarcerated parents may themselves become criminally justice involved. And that's not as big as we always used to think. So that's the good news. We find that people have a greater risk if they have two parents incarcerated. Doesn't mean that they necessarily will follow those footsteps, but it means that there's a greater risk. We recognize that children who have the same circumstances that their parents have, who aren't able to get out of poverty or aren't able to get out of addiction or anything, that increases the likelihood as well. But what I always say to people is that there's no one-to-one correlation. Just because a parent's been incarcerated does not mean a child will be incarcerated. And that's the message we want to get out to children, because that's what they always hear.
Right. Well, see, and you're working with teachers, which is critical, right? I mean, right. The teacher plays a key role here, right?
Teachers play a huge role. And we talked earlier about the stigma that a child may be afraid to talk about it, or parents might not tell children the truth. And the reality is that there is statistical evidence that we do have that adults who work with children can stigmatize children, you know, so in every walk of life. So that's why we want to be careful about that. So that's why I do a lot of training with teachers, counselors. I've done with Boston police and other police officers. So
yeah, words matter.
Words matter and our approach matters.
Mm-hmm. Are there other common misperceptions about children with incarcerated parents?
I'd say the biggest misperception is that the child will him or herself be incarcerated one day, and there's no factual evidence to that. The second, I would say, and this is the hard one for me to talk about, is that I always say to people, every child who has an incarcerated parent has an incarcerated parent. They're all the same in that way. But no two children with incarcerated parents are alike. And it varies very much by the family circumstances. I mentioned my own family circumstances. I did have a lot of privilege, and I won't deny that. But I also had one incredibly loving, good mother. And I'm a testament to the fact that you can do well with one good parent.
Mm-hmm. There are lots of single parents out there who will agree.
Lots of single parents. And so I think that you asked me, you know, if there are other things we believe about children. I think we believe that we know what's happening. We don't know what's happening until we act them.
Right. A social worker that works with children of incarcerated parents said, and I'm paraphrasing here, I hear all the time that some people don't deserve to be parents, but I believe every child deserves to have parents. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of something you touched mm-hmm. on, Megan. We shouldn't be quick to judge because somebody's in jail that they're a bad parent.
Right, exactly.
They may have committed a crime, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad parent.
And it doesn't mean they don't love their children.
Right. Real quickly, Audrey, I want to touch on this. You have this restorative justice pocketbook. What is that?
We're trying this new way of being able to engage the children so that we can help them to recognize what are the things that are underlying the decision-making that they're doing and find a way to talk across differences so that they can find reconciliation rather than making some sort of a punitive system. Mm-hmm. We don't want to say you have to leave because you aren't able to behave in their way. We want to try to help them understand what are the behaviors that we want and why are we building a community where we can care about each other and support each other. And so it's a different way of thinking about justice mm-hmm. so that it's trying to be more supportive and loving rather than punitive.
Right. And Megan, if we look at incarceration of parents from the perspective of children, what are some of the issues that we should be addressing, and especially when we're reconciling parents coming out of the system? Mm-hmm.
Well, I said at the top of the hour, and I wasn't sure I was as articulate as I wanted to be, parental incarceration is now considered an ACE, an adverse childhood experience. That means that it's an experience like trauma or divorce that can affect a child long after the event has occurred. So I think one thing we need to do is recognize that incarceration may impact children, and we should ask them about that. You know, do you want to talk about this? If not, that's fine. If you want to talk about it, we're here. The other thing is we have to recognize that there might be children who are visiting parents and who might be traumatized by that. We want to look at how we can help parents connect with children. We want to look at the school behavior and, more importantly, school performance. That's something that's really important to me. More important than the behavior is the performance. How are they performing in school, and how can we help them?
All right. Megan Sutherland will be giving a talk on the developmental impact of incarceration on children tonight, 7 o'clock at St. David's Episcopal Church in South Yarmouth. We'll have a link with more information about her talk and Amazing Grace of Cape Cod Summer Camp program at our website, capeandislands.org. Megan Sullivan and Julie Idle, thanks so much for coming in, sharing this with us. Appreciate it. Thank you. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.